Let's calibrate our minds for a few minutes and get out from the world outside. You know? Normally, there aren't no lectures for Swamis, what we call a satsang, fellowship with truth. Sangha means fellowship, and sat means truth, that which is. And when we get together, three things are happening at the same time. We have a physical contact, a mental contact, and a spiritual contact, or extrasensory contact going on. Tonight's satsang involves us with origin of man and his involvement. In order to understand that, we have to understand what we are. It's very easy to say we are created and pass it off because some book tells us that. And it's easy to relate to it from a church and history. And be very smug about it. In that sense, we tend to speculate. But when you have experienced enough of heartaches, distress, and illnesses, you question, truly are you created? Do you really know? Or are you merely believing because somebody says it? And not until you make the research to investigate and to be certain that it is truly so, you will always live in doubt. There is enough evidence around us to create the doubt of man's origin, and enough evidence to make him wonder if the doubt is real or possible that man might be created. It's a tremendous seesaw puzzle. When you open your eyes and you look outside in the world, the evidence is called evolution. Can I be created? You close your eyes and you fall asleep. Let's say you don't wake up tomorrow morning. Interesting. Then you're going to know if you're really created. The laugh is on you. You see? That's where you're caught in. Waking up and looking outside and doubting the possibility of your existence. Falling asleep and may not wake up and then wonder where you're existing. That is the question of origin. Between eyes open and eyes closed. Each one of us lives in this trap between open eyes, looking at the history of this environment, and possible asking, am I really created? With all this evidence around that tells me it's evolution. Then closing the eyes for a brief moment and falling asleep. Then the fearful doubt of not waking up. Ending life right there. Possible I may be created. And I opened my eyes again and I said, no, I'm born. And I closed my eyes and I said, I am born. Because something is going on inside me, I'm dreaming. What am I dreaming? Why am I dreaming? Does the dream end? Our consciousness plays a marvelous game with us. And history, with all its writings, always point to the origin of our existence. And we go to the churches and we ask the question, where did you come from? And they give us answers. Yet the answers don't seem to satisfy some of us. And for others, it's enough. And for others, there is no answer. Until we seek out the spiritual teachers who tell us what the answer is. See, no one can tell you what the origin is unless he has actually experienced the origin. Remember Jesus said, the blind lead the blind. The boat fall in a hole. What he's really saying, how can a person who has no concept of the reality of his internal consciousness convey to you by rituals and by sermons what you actually are and he has never experienced death? Does he really know when he dies, really? If you ask a minister, I'm not studying to be a priest, even now I'm ordained non-denominational minister. Years ago he'd ask me the question, are you a man or woman or your son asleep? You're not able to answer. You ask the minister to do the same question, the priest or rabbi. Do you know if you're a man or a woman when you are sound asleep? What he's going to do? Before you know it, he's dead silence, no more answers. You run out of words. Then turn around now and ask yourself the same question. Do you know if you're a man or a woman when you are sound asleep? With all our education and all our scientific researches, it doesn't satisfy that one answer. And that's the eternal pressure in the brain. You call it the search for God. Wanting to know for sure, beyond doubt, if you are man or woman, then you are sound asleep. You see, there's a problem when you're asleep. You always go to bed with the idea you're going to get up tomorrow morning to carry on what you left off. But you got no guarantee that's going to happen to you. I may go to bed tonight and say, carry on tomorrow. If I don't wake up tomorrow, and for sure if I stink up the place, they can either cremate me or send me to a parts bank or bury me. And that would be the end of what I think I am. So you see, your origin becomes very important to you. It becomes a very important question to you, to be resolved in a human body. You can't resolve this question when you're dead. It don't make you any smarter. Dead men don't get any smarter. Even you hear of people who contact mediums and spirits beyond the grave. You never heard of a smarter spirit. He always only can tell you what he learned. So, resolving the question for you as to your origin, this is a personal quest. It's a personal confrontation with yourself. What are you, actually? A creation or an evolution? We have to take the writings of certain men, and their lives must project to us some type of a value that would give us the credence to believe or accept that these men might have achieved or did achieve that awareness of who they were while they were asleep. And you can only find that type of knowledge in your scriptures of every nation. And the scriptures of every nation all give you two basic answers for your origin. First answer is God made man in his own image and likeness. That means he made him, we look like something that looks like us. We were a reflection of something. What that something is, we got to inquire. We can't just take it that literally, we got to find out. Male and female created them, so equal rights were there at the start. No conflict. And God breathed into man the breath of life. Now you know that is a very interesting statement. Not too long ago, we used to believe that oxygen kept us alive. And the breath of life is oxygen. It ain't true. I saw where they took away the oxygen machine from a dying man and he refused to die. They took away the heart machine and the heart refused to pump. Stop. They took away the brain machine and the brain refused to stop. Something keeping him alive. Yendan. The doctors took away all of the life support systems simply because this time has come to die. You know how long that meant after that? A very, very long time. Not depending on eating, not depending on breathing, not depending on the body, even the woman breathing. Something deep down inside of that man was going. And the breath of life is not just obvious. There are a lot of forces in the air around us that are responsible for keeping us alive. We're just tapping on it. The very source of life in our researches. But it says in the scriptures that one answer. After God breathed, spiritual power breathed, infused us with breath of life, man became a living soul. Now, it didn't say man became a living body or a living mind. It became a living soul. That tells us a very important truth about ourselves. The truth is that man is soul. He doesn't have a soul. But everywhere you go, somebody's trying to save your soul. Wherever you twist and turn, somebody's promoting some kind of a ticket to heaven someplace to save your soul. But never telling you that you're a soul and let your soul come forward and stand up on its own feet and perform. Never really drawing from the depths of your nature to let you experience yourself. But that's one answer we get from the scriptures of all nations about man. The next answer that we find that is, and we're going to prove all to ourselves very scientifically. By the time we're finished with this satsang, you're going to be so messed up. You don't know if you're created or you're in evolution. You will wish you never were here. You see, I didn't say born. I didn't say you were created. You would wish you were never here. And I don't mean this room. The other great statement about man is written by the great mystic John in the first verses of his writings. In the beginning, that means at the onset, was the Word. It sounds like somebody's talk. And the Word was with God. And the Word was God. I didn't say the Word can be God, or will be God, or the Word is going to be God. I said the Word was God. Plain and simple. And the Word was made flesh. Now when you look around, human flesh, animal flesh, two kinds. And then it says, dwelt in man, and the Word dwelt in man. So it decided, it singled out between the two types of flesh, which one it wanted to be in. Man flesh, human flesh, not animal. That tells us a very interesting thing about ourselves. That within ourselves we carry the potential of God. It tells us that we don't have to look for Him. It tells us that we don't know how to release it. And that's the two major answers given by all the religions of the world concerning man's origin. Now, if we say that we are created, what is created? The body? The mind? The spirit? If we say we evolved, Is that the body evolved? Is the mind evolved or the spirit evolved? So you really want? It leaves you questioning your existence. Well, if we question our existence, why are we here in the first place? What are we doing here in the first place? God created us in His own image and likeness, male and female created Him. Breathed the breath of life into man, and man became a living soul. Is that the end of it? Is that all there is? But it says that something was said to us, an ultimatum was given to us. Go forth, replenish, and multiply, and have dominion over the universe. Now you see, we can go forth out from some place and multiply, that we reproduce ourselves. Have dominion means to control, but there's something wrong about it. We can't own nothing. Dominion was said, I let you own the universe, my friend. That's the rub in this creation. Anytime we think we're going to own a piece of dirt, we may bury ourselves in it after. You see, that's as far as you can own it. And that is very, very factual. Now, when we come down to the scientific approach to it and try to break down this concept and see it now, we find that it is very scientific. Our creation of ourselves is a very scientific fact. We may start out believing it out of sheer fear, or believing it because it is the right thing to do. But when we start questioning it and investigating it, we run into a lot of conditions that may make us have a great respect for what it is all about in the end. Not right away. We may doubt it from the start. We may make a lot of statements and theories, but eventually we come back to realizing there's something going on and that we have no control and we merely have to flow it. But that's something we're here to talk about, how we get back to flowing. First we want to know what is our origin and what is our involvement while we're here. One person says to me a long time ago, I don't believe this is my first time in this world. And yet I believe it's the only time I ever came into this world. So make up your mind. He says, all right, I don't accept that this is my first time. I have a feeling I came from someplace. I said, that's all right. He said, at the same time, I don't believe I came from any place because I have no evidence of it. This has got to be my first time. So that's perfectly true. I said, but let's look at it one more. Let's say this is your first time and it's going to be your last time. Why did you pick out to be a woman? Why did you pick to be a man? Why did you pick to be a king? Why did you pick to be a doctor? Why did you pick to be an ordinary maid? That question started to set up thought ways in her brain. Of all the occupations, she ended up being a housemaid, struggling for a few dollars and swearing away the world outside because the prices are going up, inflation. And it's going to be her first and last time. So I says to her, look, there is the AMP people. It's your first and last time. You don't have to suffer. Just walk and take what you need and walk home because you're entitled to it. God made you if you accept it that way. first and last time. And you don't worry where you're going when you die. You don't have to worry where you came from. And if the police hit you on the head when you walk out with the material, simply because you wouldn't let go of it, why worry? This is our origin. This is who we are, first and last time. She said, but I can't do that. It ain't right. I said, where you get your sense of rightness from? How you get this sense of rightness? Who give it to you? It's not your first and last time, as you say. And if you do say it's your first and last time, where you get your right, your sense of right? From society? Because your parents told you not to do it? Or because the laws are set up to punish you because you behave wrong? Where does sense of right suddenly come in? When you go to sleep at night, do you got sense of right? When you snitch your neighbor's bread or something, and don't tell, you don't have a sense of right, you don't even remember. So where is your sense of right? That makes you think now, maybe it's not my first and last time. Something inside of you don't allow you to seem or want to break the rules around the environment. Something deep down in that energy pattern of your makeup forces you to think. You may call it a conscience, or you may call it a higher self, or a deeper sense of consciousness, deeper sense of reverence for life itself. That is consciousness kind of working. That makes us come to the realization that it may not be our first and last time. That gnawing sensation inside of us that seems to want to do things that are right, not things that are wrong. We don't want to involve ourselves with things that seem to have a feedback. That's the new term now. In the old days, they used to call it sin. And they used to call it what you sow, you reap. And in the Eastern country, we used to call it karma. Now we can call it feedback. It's the new term. Change the term, don't change the condition. We're still stuck with it. We are human beings, we are caught up in our origin of ourselves, and we are caught up in the flow of our thinking, in our consciousness. We are finding out that there is more to this mechanism. Alright, let us take back the very first statement that the scriptures say about man, and see if we can't observe it, analyze it, and be satisfied what we are, what is our really our origin. And that will give us a sense of direction. With today's terminology and today's views and research, we can actually look at these statements much more objectively, and then we can accept ourselves. Come, let us make man. Come, that means let us get together. But the word us is plural. It is a come, I will make man. There's no such statement, you see. Come, let us make man. That's a definite indication there are more than one speaking at a time or communicating at a time. In our own image and likeness, two things. Anytime we think of image, we're thinking in abstract geometry. And likeness would have to be some kind of force field. Man is geometrically an abstract principle, having form as a symbol. That's the only symbol man is, I. The greatest geometrical symbol there is, one. Moses had to come to grips with that too. When he was in the mountain, which is up in the head, and saw the light inside his own brain, a burning bush, and heard the divine consciousness saying, I am. That I am. Now you go figure that one out. God is telling him, I am God. Come worship me. He didn't say that to Moses. He said, I am that I am. Now we got another statement in this. The Bible makes us ponder this I am state. Be thou still and know that I am God. In other words, quiet your brain, slow it down, and know that the I am is in you is God. The I am principle is God. That's the abstract part of you. And Jesus said, I and the Father are one. And you see me, you see the Father. In the body, we are an expression of this principle. We're made in the image of it. We are made in this abstract principle. Now, if I'm going to tell you what I am, I'd have to say, I am Adam Ali. And Bob would have to say, I am Bob. Donald. And anybody in this room, and if this tape recorder is going to tell me who he is, he'll say, I'm a tape recorder, right? And the good old Popeye will say, I am what I am, Popeye the Sailor Man. We're all saying, I am, I am, I am, but it's the one abstract. And if all the I ams were to talk, we'd have one cosmic big I am, and that's what we've got, universal I am. And the universal I am lives in the ocean of beingness. As Shakespeare says, to be or not to be is a question. What are you going to be? What do you want to be? Out of your beingness, you tell me what you are by saying, I am. And right there we have the very core of what we are. The very source of our origin. We're made in the image of it. The I, pure abstract principle of oneness. And the likeness of it, that means we are a vibratory force. The whole universe that all around you here is a state of pulsating force fields. To give you a good example of that. Everybody know what water is made of? What is water made of? Hydrogen and oxygen. Great. Now, what is ice made of? All right, what is steam made of? So how come the hydrogen and oxygen? You see something interesting about it? Steam is made of hydrogen and oxygen. Ice is made of hydrogen and oxygen. Water is made of hydrogen and oxygen. And yet steam don't look like water. And water don't look like ice. Now, when you boil the water, what do you get? And when you freeze the water, what do you get? Alright. But where does the hydrogen and oxygen go? Water turns to ice when you freeze it. It turns to steam when you cook it. Well, what happens to the hydrogen and the oxygen?
Changes.
So you see, our likenesses are only like waves of the ocean of the I-ness, truth. And you look at yourself, you have a body. It's an atomic form on this ocean of life or energy, which encapsulates the I-ness or oneness. And you're stuck with it. It's neither male nor female. So you see, come let us make man in our own image or likeness, male and female created him. Is I the I in you male or female? But male and female is necessary because it's polarity. Positive, it's negative, masculine, feminine. It's a necessary polarity. You can't have a single force. It's not come let me make man. It's come let us make man. So they had to be male, female, positive, negative, and at the same time neutral too. All existing in the highest. Now, if we don't accept it, then let's look at evolution. We don't want to accept creation because it's not so easy to accept in our environment. Too many things are happening. Babies are dying. People are killing each other. How can I accept that as the cause of my being? Let's accept evolution. So you say to yourself, I was born. Not the chest, I was born. The chances for you to be born are so great that if you were the only sperm that got to the ovum, somebody else would be in your place. You're born. So great. You think of the chances of all the sperm that is released by the father up the uterine canal, and you came out. What happened to the all the rest? You see, your bornness now suddenly exploded a bit. If there isn't some directing force determining why you got to be the only sperm to get up there, and if this ovum don't want you, you don't have a baby. And imagine if two or three get up there at the same time. We got triplets or twins. You see? So you can't just jump up and say, I was born. Therefore, I was able to think out into this world. Your true nature is exploding now for the first time. We really don't know what we are. Because we cannot say to ourselves, if I fall asleep, I am satisfied with the fact that I live a simple life in the outer world, sleeping, working for a few dollars, and passed. When I'm seeing all my friends either doing something that I would like to do, and something inside them don't do it. Or something inside prevents me from doing it. Or something inside is telling me it's not right to do. This internal part of us makes us look at ourselves more objectively as to our true origin. And then we can take St. John, he was more scientific, you see. He said, in the beginning was the Word. That means in the very onset of the creative force field, there was sonics, Word, sonic vibrations, vibrations of sun, cosmic sun, cosmic vibrations. Scientists all admit today that our whole universe is nothing but a congealed force field of some waves. Even the dark spaces in space that doesn't permit light to pass through will permit some to pass through it. You can let some pass through the dark space, but light may not pass through. And it don't say in your scripture that God is light. It says in the scripture, and God was the Word. God is the Son, the cosmic principle. He is that divine logos, the divine power there. And we can prove it to ourselves, even if we don't like it. And when we prove it to ourselves, we can always use conversation to do it. We can have to use this very Son that He puts inside of us to tell the left side or the right side of the brain, yeah, man, it does work, and you accept yourself as you are. You are nothing but a sum principle. When you get all put together inside, you are sum. You begin to realize that you are sum. You are this one divine law. And if you want to tell somebody else, you're going to have to use sum to tell them. If you want to tell them who you are, you have to use sum to tell them. I am John, I am Mary, still sum ways. If you want to draw it, you still got to use a geometrical happen. See? So when we come down to the question of being evolved, we're dealing with speed, motion, which involves time. When the eyes are open, the outer environment is an evolution. Because it takes a long time for an apple tree, when it planted in the ground, while you're there focused. But then you close, when you close the mind, the eyes, and when you look inside, you can see the whole apple tree bearing all the fruit all at one time. Inside, when the eyes are closed, the universe is a creation. Outside, when the eyes are open, the universe is an evolution. It's a strange phenomenon. It's the greatest show there is to entertain the soul. In the Eastern writings, they say the outer world is an illusion. It is an illusion. The scientist says the outer world is relativity. Whatever language you want to use, we're all saying the same thing to ourselves. There is no reality out there. Everything outside of the, when the eyes are open, is changing in different ways. Like I said before, ice, which is H2O, you cook it, it becomes steam. When you freeze the water, again it comes back to ice. When the steam goes up into the sky, it becomes a cloud. And what is a cloud made of? H2O, it comes down back as water, we call rain, H2O. All the same outside there, nothing changing. Nothing. Everything going from ground to ground, same thing. The one truth is out there. Inside now, that is a different question. That's a different realization. As the young people said, that's a different ball game. Looking inside and finding out what's really happening inside. And we have to continue the scientific process of our origin, because science is forcing us to recognize it. And in their own way, they're forcing us back to God, the creative power. Strange. Every discovery brings us close to the fact that the whole universe is vibratory energy. Now, Einstein even went to show there's no such thing as space, because every unit of space is occupied by energy. There's not a single unit of space that is empty. It's all occupied by energy. Can't catch it. None of us can capture it. But this is what you call space, is still energy. Right here, between these two objects, is still energy. In this whole room right now, all the TV waves and the radio waves are passing through. All the cosmic rays are passing through. And every unit of space is occupied there. So we don't have any space. That automatically tells us something about ourselves. Our bodies are bombarded by it. And energy is not stationary. It's always in motion. And we only can measure something to tell the time by its motion. You take a ruler, what are you measuring? Something you call space, a condition you call space, by the length, by the depth, by the breadth. Never realizing the amount of energy, great forces that are bombarding it. And at the same time, we say we want to go from here to our house, and it takes about 30 minutes. What are we measuring? The motion that it takes to move the solid mass to that location. And we use another kind of a ruler, a round one. That's all it is. You pay a lot of money for it. And we call it a watch. Let's test another ruler. You see, it measures motion. And when we do get down to what the scientist finally admits to themselves that time is, no such thing as time now. We haven't found it. We have found no such thing as space either. We found everything occupied by energy and every form of energy in a state of motion. Yet, inwardly, that is what we are. Outwardly, we see this condition, we call it space. And from here to here, we call that time. So we live this ridiculous fantasy called evolution. And we can't accept the fact that that evolution or illusion is not genuine, as much as the creation inside is genuine. We have a conflict. Until we can reconcile what is happening out there with what's happening inside, there is constant conflict. And that's the us. See? Come, let us make man. These two forces, outside, inside. It's in constant conflict with itself. Question comes up, why did he make it? Why pick on us? Are you aware of the statement? Why pick on me, Charlie Brown? Everybody's picking on me. Why everybody's picking on the soul? Why does the soul have to get involved? Why does it got to be considered born? There has to be a reason. Soul is perfect. Which we say in your Bible, the first creation or the first civilization of the universe, angelic beings. We were angelic beings at one time. If we were created. See, there are two creations in your Bible. One called the Garden of Eden, and one called making man in his own image and likeness, male and female created together. And bringing the breath of life into man, man becoming the living soul. And then giving man the ultimatum to go out, replenish, multiply, and have dominion over the universe. That is our very first civilization, our very first existence. Deep down, something tells us we came from there, but we can't prove it to ourselves as yet. And therefore, we feel that whatever is involved, we have to make a change. The only information that we have, and it comes from our scriptures again, and we can call these beings that seem to be called by the scriptures angels, they fly around. Modern scientists may say, oh man, don't kid yourself, they're extraterrestrial beings, they're astronauts. They were flipping in and out through the centuries. They just took them for angels. Call them what you want. It makes no difference as to what it is. Point is this. The being was created to have dominion over the universe. And the being might not have been born. They said they were created. That might be a very tremendous part of the scientific nature of our bodies that we aren't familiar with as yet. Maybe within our own makeup, we carry the ability to master birth and create a will, a new body. Maybe, as Jesus said, to him that overcometh, I will not send forth a second time. Until we understand what he's talking about, religion don't mean nothing to nobody, it's just a bunch of churchianity. It can be highly mistaken, and highly misunderstood as to what actually happened inside. And out of our own faith and our own conviction, we can create our heavens and hells. And we do that to ourselves, with our own consciousness. Man isn't aware of what his consciousness is doing for him, because he isn't exposed to it sufficiently. Scriptures tell us that as a man thinketh, that is what he is. As a man thinketh in his heart, that is what he is. And to think, you have to use your consciousness. And if you use your consciousness, you have to be convinced in your heart as to what you want to make it a reality. And that's your involvement. You are involved with something. You have to think to be in your body. 5-6 days ago, you had to think of coming here tonight. You didn't just up and walk in. And if you did decide to up and walk in, you still have to think. It has to mean something to you in the process of your consciousness. How you're getting involved with your life. Why are you involved? You're involved in thinking. And thinking is not satisfactory when it's illogical. Do anybody feel illogical thinking is satisfactory to them? Doesn't something revolt inside of you if it's illogical? So thinking sets up rules and produces certain type of feelings in you. And therefore you want to have a reason for everything you do. Now, and if you have a reason, then you want to crave to fulfill that reason. Having a reason and having no craving, what would happen? You have to crave something. If I have a motive and I have no craving for it, what would happen? And if I have a craving and I have no motive, what would happen? So craving and motive, or reason, they go together. And that's involved in thinking, is involved in our consciousness. Let's see if we inherited our craving. Are we born with it? Or we were created with it, or we evolved with it. Go forth, replenish, multiply and have dominion of the universe. That's a command, that's a direct command. That then is implanted in us. That craving is implanted in us to dominate our environment, to regulate it. We are motivated from inside by a direct sonic vibration from the I-amness in your nature to control your environment within the range of your senses. You can't afford it. Therefore, you feel very helpless when you cannot control it. You feel very despondent, lost. And you have no control over the environment, the worst thing can happen to you is to have 360-degree vision. You know what happened then? You ever been in one of those all-wrong movie house? When you look this way, front and back, all the pictures, what does it crosses upon itself. And therefore, none of the pictures make any sense. Because you seem to be looking through the back of your head at the same time, as much as you're looking through the front of your head, or you're looking through the side of your head, or the top of your head. Yet, total realization of ourselves is involved with a 360-degree vision. It's a natural phenomenon inside of us. And that is what makes us know from inside of us, not from outside, that our universe is a creation and not an evolution. We know from inside, when we look inside, and the Eastern people call it opening of the third eye. Jesus called it the single eye in man. When thine eyes, these two, are single, whole body is full of light. This whole atomic structure you see here, the cellular mass, is all light. Not bones, not heart and lungs, not flesh. It's all light. And not light of understanding, as some ministers would like you to believe. It's pure atomic light that a scientist works with every day to build with. That's what you are inside. And when we have to come to grips with that about our nature, we get a very small smidgen of it when we close our eyes and fall asleep at night and dream. That is so minute, it's like a speck of dirt on the top of a pinhead. That's how little smidgen of light you see inside of yourself. When the hole inside opens up, the brilliance of the light of your soul, measured by a spiritual scientist, is equal to the brilliance of 13 suns. That's the brilliance of the light of your soul. Do you realize what I just said? This is an atomic fact. The brilliance of the light of your soul is equal to the brilliance of the light of 13 suns burning. Fantastic. When Jesus said, when your eyes are single, the whole body is full of light. You couldn't stand it. You begin to realize God is God no matter how you look. He is creator inside. But he plays a dual role by making it appear as evolution outside, by conditioning it as time. Just as you say, H2O is what water is made up of. Ice is made from H2O, and steam is made from H2O. Yet, H2O, without it, you couldn't get water. You couldn't get steam. You couldn't get ice. Without this internal light, this outside world could not be. This evolution that we call here a home could not exist for us. There would be no relationship to it. We're involved in it for one basic reason: to transcend it. To him that overcome it, I will not send forth a second time. You can transcend it when you're dead. You'd have to do it over a second time. You have to transcend it while you're alive. That's why we find that when Jesus came into the world, he transcended it. And he transcended it by the most simple method that each one of us has to face sooner or later. It's called death. Or the divine birth. Our scriptures tell us, when this body throws off corruption, that means when this body stops the ability to decay or rot, as a scientific term, or decomposition, and takes on non-corruption, non-decomposition, it is a glory unto the Lord. That's the first time we claim our sonship in God. We can claim it then. And that's the truth we seek to know from within ourselves. That makes us free. Free men all, Lord of ourselves, standing on our own 2 feet. I can't carry you, you can't carry me, and I can't eat for you, you can't eat for me. No way, shape, or form. We are all going back into our own true nature when we look inside as to where we're involved. And it's back in the principle called sleep and death. Sleep is the little death, which we know we wake up every day and look at ourselves. I'm a Daniel, my man. Go to bed tonight. I hope I get up. If I don't get up, goodbye, world. But if I know who I am inside, it will make no difference. Because I haven't lost anything. My I am-ness continues with my conviction of my I am-ness. And wherever I pick up to take the I am-ness on, its true journey, that is eternal already. My soul is eternal. But I have to know that from within myself. This is my faith, that there is a God. not my belief. Die, live and die, daily in the Christ. He knew the art of how to die consciously every day within himself. He entered that state consciously. He knew where he was going inside all the time. He was a master of the art. Jesus knew that. He said, be of good cheer, for I have overcome the world. If he did not overcome the world, the five senses of evolution around us, his journey or mission here was absolutely not. To just come down and die on the cross and take off and perform some high-handed tricks, don't make it what it is. Religion is truth. It's scientific, not churchianity. The real truth is that this is the divine temple of God. And you are soul. You don't have to save it, you got to realize it. That's the question. Realizing it. Putting it into action. Make it work. And it's not required to make it work by tremendous disciplines or punishments. To make it work, a very simple rule is required. The greatest rule that Bob will tell you, it's called love. It's the hardest discipline you ever live by. Every other discipline fails into insignificance or seems very, very immature or childish in comparison to the discipline of love. We go to the extent where we say, there is no greater love man can give than he would lay down his life for himself. Love even extracts that out of you as a discipline. And there we come again grips with the death process, knowing why we would want to die for it. Unless we haven't passed through inside and realize our involvement and want to rise out of this involvement with the five senses and the so-called evolution of the world around us, we cannot really be of any benefit. Yet when we rise above it, our presence is a light in the world of the darkness, of doubt, of confusion. That's why Jesus said, while I am in the world, that's the I am principle within the man Jesus now, totally identified with his true nature as to who he was and what he is, when he's sound asleep. Not just because he opened his eyes. He knows, I am the light of the world. I am that principle. I have total knowing of it. He knows now inside that the soul has the brilliance of the 13 suns shining. But greater than that, the soul has to be liberated from this earth. And when it's liberated, it has more brilliance than 13 suns. Every soul that achieves non-attachment, remember I said, to have dominion, he didn't say to have ownership. Any soul that achieves non-attachment in the human body radiates the brilliance of 13 suns right away. It can be seen by all the angelic beings in all the realms, but it's not liberated. Even though it has achieved non-attachment, it's fully self-realized, it has not achieved God-realization. Because there is an injunction in the scriptures, and that injunction applies to every one of us. None, that means no soul, cometh unto the Father, that means enter the pure stream of the divine consciousness, but by me, that is the Christ principle in the man Jesus was fully identified with the Christ principle. And therefore, when he was making the statement, he was declaring to the world of souls that they who even try with their ability to achieve non-attachment and achieve self-realization cannot enter full God-realization until they go through Christ-realization. Christ-realization is essential. Claiming the essential is what you call the master consciousness. We have to strive for that. It's the only begotten Son, not only S-O-N, but S-U-N. Something brighter than the 13 suns. The Christ man, his soul nature is twice 13. You can understand now how bright that soul is. If this, the brightness of 13 suns, and if you look at a sun and multiply by 13, and that would be equivalent of your soul in a state of non-attachment, then multiply that by 2, that will give it 26. That's how bright the soul of the Christ-realized person is. Inside. Now, if you're taking it in the outer world, a Christ-realized man can make his own universe. Well, this is not his home. This is not his kingdom. He tells you right away. There's nothing here for them. They don't get attached to the environment of evolution. That's why when Jesus was in the body, he said, this is not my kingdom. They don't have any need. They know from deep inside their origin. They know what they're involved with. They found the truth at last. Now they want to get out and go home back to the Father. That's what they're aiming at, to make us realize our soul nature. Our occupation is not our soul nature. Our occupation changes. Our sex changes from pattern to body, to, from life to life. But when are we going to wake up to the reality of who we are when we're sunk to sleep, let alone when we don't wake up after we fall asleep? So we have to learn that lesson over and over and over and over. Some people call it reincarnation. The universe is not designed for reincarnation, it's designed for resurrection. Jesus didn't come to teach us reincarnation. He accepted that reincarnation is one of the rules in this process. But resurrection was the journey. That's where we emerge, that's how we come out. It's like a caterpillar. It comes down, eats its way through life, spins its own cocoon, which you call a shroud, or learns its own art of how to act, and then emerge into another creature. This creature is called a butterfly. It can fly. It has freedom for the first time. We are not free. We are bound down to this evolutionary plate, outside and inside. The more we see outside, the more we're caught up in it, and the more we think what is outside is reality. This is evolution. When we look inside, how long it takes you to sit down and look inside? Ask yourself. You know, I met this Swami years ago that made me a Swami and my wife a Swami. And he went to see his teacher. And his teacher, he told the teacher after he was initiated at the age of 14, and he went back to see his teacher at the age of 65. And he told the teacher, he says, Swamiji, out of respect for you, since I was initiated, I never saw nothing inside of God. Here I am, 65 years of age. I don't believe in anything, you know. All my friends have had marvelous experience. I have nothing. The teacher looked at him and said, tell me. Well, imagine the teacher was 45 years of age when the man was 14 years of age. Now the man is 65 years of age. You can imagine how old the teacher is now? Good. The teacher told him, tell me how long you think you can sit down and meditate without fidgeting. He didn't ask him how long he can meditate. He said, how long you can sit down in meditation without fidgeting? That's the test. Without fidgeting and doing something and going on. So he said to me, I played it safe. I told the teacher 2 hours. And I look at the man talking to me and I know 2 hours, very few people can sit down without fidgeting. And he's playing it safe. You can imagine how long it's meant to release it down. 2 hours is playing it safe. He's playing it safe, he says 2 hours. If I was going to tell you, I could sit down for 15 minutes, I'm playing it safe. You know, I can do it more longer than 15 minutes, right? But I'm playing it safe. I could imagine the man was doing it. So the teacher says, show me. Indians are very pragmatic, you know, they don't waste time. Show me. So he had to sit down and show the teacher. So while he's sitting down, demonstrating how he can sit down without fidgeting and meditating, the teacher took a nail. Now picture for one moment up in the mountains of India, there's no sales and robot to find a brand new nail. That nail is going to be old and rusty. And it'd be a long spike. And he took a stone and he nailed it, the Swami's foot to the ground. Waited. Swami sat in the lotus position, so he nailed him through the thigh, the calf. Then he opened his eyes after 2 hours. He said, you see, teacher, I don't see anything. I don't hear anything. I haven't got anything. So the teacher said, look at your foot. When he looks at his foot, he sees the nail going through. Then you can imagine what's going through his mind now. So the teacher says, I'm going to pull it out. I'm going to heal you. But I'm not going to take away the scar. That is to remind you how deep in God you are. Now go away from here. Don't stick around. So he chased the big grown man, 65 years of age, humiliated him to that effect and chased him out. But that night when he went home, he said, from then on, his head was like 4th of July from his down. Everywhere he turned, up, down, inside, it's all 4th of July. You imagine your head going on 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, like, you now begin to know what God is? He found out what creation is, that this whole universe was a creation, not an evolution. But then he realized that he was not ready to handle that particular experience before that particular time. So many of us who come to this particular confrontation, like Paul, he said, I rebuke you in your rejoicing. That means don't get too over-involved in the evolution around you through 5 senses. For I live and die daily. That means he can go in and shut down this body of his, and perceive this condition of what he actually is, as a creation, not an evolution. He live and die daily in the Lord, meaning he was entering the pure stream of life, the pulsation of life. Now, if he never woke up, and he didn't wake up one day, did Paul lose anything? No, Paul didn't lose anything. Paul gained something. Just like all the other saints, who, when they don't wake up, we have evidence of what happens to them. You remember the story of Saint Stephen? Anybody ever heard that? Saint Stephen was a man who believed in God in the time of Jesus. And he was taken out and he was stoned to death. And when he died, the dogs at his body, and somebody saved his hand. It made it part on the hands, arm, and saved it. That arm is still among us at this point. Now, years ago, when I was studying to be a priest, I was always intrigued where that arm is located. It's in Hungary, in Budapest. They have it in a casket. And it looks like living flesh. It doesn't rot. Stephen knew who he was when he went to bed. So it didn't matter if he didn't wake up or he was stoned to death. And the dogs had to die. I would say this, those dogs were fortunate. Because next time around, the God in the flesh in the man has changed the flesh in the dog. Remember I said, John said, and the Word was made flesh and dwelt in man. It didn't dwelt in the animal flesh. Now imagine a dog eating the flesh of such a person. What has happened to the consciousness of the dog? Or those dogs? They too will be elevating. Whenever we realize who we are, deep down inside, and to the involvement, we make a definite transition on this mechanism. This is what they call the divine sonship, or the divine body, divine truth. This is the involvement we're in. It's our origin. We are soul. We don't have a soul. We're involved in the process of correcting our feedback problems, or our karmic problems between desire and the wrong use of desire, which we have to work out. But more than that, we have to be able to shut down the body at night and see our true nature. We have to be able to experience that. And until we experience it, we aren't going any further than where we are. Many of us can say to ourselves, when we go through a lot of Pentecostal and different type of spiritual experiences, that we are saved. Being saved, truly saved, we have to go much more deeper into our scriptures to find out what they do, what is really being saved. We are on the journey to be saved, and in the journey to be transformed, when we have these different experiences, talking in tongues and so forth, that's preparing ourselves. But the actual transformation of knowing who we are, what we are, has to occur when we shut down at night. It has to occur then. Omar Khayyam put it another way in his saying, so that we know what we're talking about. And then we know where we're going. He said, I send the soul out into the invisible. This is the invisible. You see, you can't see until it's there. You don't see these waves. By and by, that means after a little while, the soul came back and said, I, this principle is myself, am heaven and hell. He didn't find hell, he didn't find heaven outside. But he found that within itself, the very nature, there is a conflict of evolution and creation. Now Jesus is supposed to have descended down into hell on the third day and rose and ascended unto heaven. And the only important thing about that statement is what happened to the body, to show that they're talking of a principle involving what goes on in death. Descending into hell is not a hole in the ground. Ascending into heaven is not some little remote space in the sky. It is knowing the flow between what is outwardly occurring in evolution through the five senses and what is occurring inwardly as creation without the use of the five senses. Therefore, the third day, which means shutting down the body in a state of suspension, the whole body came back. It's not a new teaching, maybe in the terminology, to suit us because we live in the modern times, but the truth is still the same. It hasn't changed. Our origin is vibration. Our involvement is to rise above the vibration of the five senses to find out what goes on when we are sound asleep, if we are a man or a woman. That's our involvement. And the karmic patterns are only the conditions we impose upon ourselves by wrong thinking. As soon as we break through that, you would say the same way as Jesus said, be of good cheer. I have overcome the world. I have risen above my evolutionary concept of my existence into the creative reality of my existence. In your creative reality of your existence, you are eternally cheerful. That means love. In that state, there are no words. It's the non-verbal state of existence. In the evolutionary state, it's a lot of words, just to convince right side and left side of the brain. Other people would never be convinced by it. You can only convince yourself. And in the case of Walt Whitman, when he was asked to describe what went on inside, he said, if I was to tell you, my tongue refuses to speak. And in the case of St. Anthony, St. Thomas of Aquinas, in fact, who wrote, he was called the great scholar of the church. One day he was writing what we call Summum Bonum, theologian. And he stopped with a pen in his hand like that, and he was looking at the blank wall. And the secretary says, sir, why have you stopped writing? And he said, what I have just seen of God and what I have written is like straw in the wind. He never finished the book. Because he never had a real experience with creation before. All he was writing on his evolutionary behavior, of what he thought the world was. So when you read all that writing now, you only read Thomas's idea of what he thought God in his evolutive thinking. Until he got the actual experience of seeing the truth inside, he never wrote. So we learn from all these great men, there's a turning point in our lives when to withdraw from the evolutionary level of the outward focus to the creative level of the inward focus. And we have to go back to the guiding point of Jesus. When the eyes are single, the whole body is full of light. And the light is shining in the darkness. You close your eyes, it's dark in there, right? Light is shining in the darkness of this whole structural pattern. And the darkness comprehends it not. Yourself don't know why light should be there. And let your light so shine before men. Let's say before animals or trees or stones. Before men. Those who have the ability to see it. That they may see the good works. Not only your ability to detach or to be unattached. The good works are shutting down and going in daily and observing it. And glorify the Father which is in you. When I look at you, I can't see anything else but God. I don't see you anymore. You're like waves in motion, but then you disappear after that.
Take a short break for about 5 minutes. Come back for 15, 20 minutes of questions.